Welcome to SCOTUSCast, First Amendment and Public Employees Edition. Thank you for tuning in. Jeffrey Heffernan was a police officer for the city of Paterson, New Jersey. A fellow police officer observed Heffernan picking up a campaign sign for the mayoral candidate running against the incumbent. Although Heffernan disclaimed any political motives and said he was merely picking the sign up for his mother, his supervisor demoted him. Heffernan sued Paterson, claiming a violation of his First Amendment rights, but lost on the grounds that, his supervisor's erroneous belief notwithstanding, the fact that Heffernan was not actually engaged in political activity doomed his claim. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit affirmed the trial court's judgment. The question before the Supreme Court is whether the First Amendment bars the government from demoting a public employee based on a supervisor's perception that the employee supports a political candidate. To discuss the case, we have Adele Keim, who is counsel at the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Keim.
Heffernan v. City of Paterson is a case about a New Jersey police officer who was demoted when he did a favor for his mother. Officer Heffernan worked for the chief of police, and his mother, who was bedridden, asked him to pick up a campaign sign for the guy who was challenging the incumbent mayor. Now, in case you're wondering, if you're in Paterson, New Jersey, challenging the incumbent means you're backing the wrong candidate. The long story short, Officer Heffernan's boss, the chief of police, caught wind of the fact that he'd been seen going to campaign headquarters for the mayor's challenger and picking up a sign to support him, and Officer Heffernan was immediately demoted back to the beat. Officer Heffernan eventually had to leave the force, and he sued, arguing that his First Amendment right to freedom of association had been violated by his boss's actions. There was no written policy banning him from engaging in political activity. And besides, Officer Heffernan said it wasn't even him who was taking political action. He was just doing a favor for his mother when he was seen at that campaign office. Officer Heffernan won a large judgment at trial, but the Third Circuit reversed, splitting with three other circuits, the First, Sixth, and Tenth. The Third Circuit held that Officer Heffernan didn't have a constitutional claim because he himself wasn't trying to exercise his right of association. He was just helping his mother. Now, the First, Sixth, and Tenth Circuits had all held that public employees who were fired or demoted because of their boss's wrong perception about which political party they supported, or because they were politically neutral, not politically active enough in favor of the, quote, right candidates, that those public employees all had First Amendment claims that they could bring. The Third Circuit said no, and the Supreme Court took Officer Heffernan's case to resolve the circuit split. At oral argument, Officer Heffernan, who was joined by the United States Solicitor General, argued that it was the city's motives that mattered. Here, the city clearly had acted with an impermissible motive. Officer Heffernan's boss demoted him because he thought that Officer Heffernan was supporting the wrong political candidate. Under any reading of the Constitution, demoting someone for supporting the wrong political candidate when they're in a non-political position violates the First Amendment. In fact, it even goes further. Under a line of cases, including Elrod, the Supreme Court has ruled that the First Amendment even protects employees who are politically neutral, employees that are punished for not doing enough to support the quote-unquote right candidate. According to Officer Heffernan and the Solicitor General, because the city had a wrong motive, Officer Heffernan should be able to recover. It's the city's wrong motive that matters for the constitutional analysis. The fact that the city made a mistake and didn't adequately investigate to see if Officer Heffernan really had the political affiliations that his boss attributed to him shouldn't get them off the hook when their motives were so bad. On the other side of the V, the city of Paterson argued that its motives were irrelevant because Officer Heffernan was politically apathetic. Counsel for the city tried to distinguish between political apathy and political neutrality, which he characterized as a conscious choice not to get involved. The city said Officer Heffernan wasn't engaging in any First Amendment protected activity, and so the First Amendment wasn't going to protect him. Both sides had difficult parts in their arguments. For example, Officer Heffernan's counsel had difficulty articulating the precise First Amendment right his client was asserting. Justice Kennedy suggested that perhaps it was the right to be free from intrusive government oversight of one's political beliefs. Counsel for the Solicitor General said perhaps it was something more along the lines of focusing on the city's impermissible motivation. On the other hand, the city of Patterson also had some hurdles to overcome. It was difficult for their lawyer to explain why the First Amendment protects political neutrality, but doesn't protect what it characterized as apathy. And it was also hard for him to explain how to tell the difference between those two things. The justices' questions at oral argument centered around two themes. Motive. The city's was very clear, but Officer Heffernan's was not. Most of the arguments and discussion between counsel and the bench asked questions like, why does this motive matter, and how can we tell what the motive is? Justice Alito went so far as to point out that Officer Heffernan had been in a difficult spot at trial. On the one hand, it would have helped his First Amendment case if he'd been able to point to First Amendment activity, but on the other hand, since the city at different points in the case had alleged that there was an unwritten policy against political activity, if he talked about his political motives, it would harm another argument in his case. Justice Alito expressed frustration with the facts, at one point remarking that these highly artificial facts made this case more like a law school hypothetical than a real-life example likely of recurring. Chief Justice Roberts focused his questions on whether there was an adequate alternative remedy under New Jersey law. Justice Scalia picked up this theme, pointing out that the Constitution doesn't provide a remedy for every wrong. He went further and asserted that the Constitution was primarily intended as a guarantor of individual rights and not a check on government power. This prompted Justice Ginsburg to remark wryly that the text of the First Amendment actually says that Congress shall make no law. Justice Ginsburg made that point in the course of raising the argument that the First Amendment in this context should be interpreted the same way that courts interpret Title VII. Title VII forbids employers from engaging in discriminatory actions. And for decades, Title VII case law has protected employees who are discriminated against on the basis of their employer's wrongful perception of their protected characteristics. So to take a classic example from my area of the law, religious liberty, if your employer discriminates against you because you are a turban-wearing member of the Sikh faith, but your employer thinks that you're a Muslim, you can still recover for religious discrimination under Title VII, even though your employer was flat out wrong about whether you followed the faith of Islam. Your employer's mistaken perception that you're a Muslim doesn't get him out of complying with Title VII's prohibition on religious discrimination. Also during oral argument, Justices Sotomayor and Breyer asked questions along the same line that Justice Kagan asked. All three justices seemed quite skeptical of the rule proposed by the city, that the First Amendment would protect political neutrality but not apathy. At one point, even Justice Alito got in on the act, pointing out that for many Americans, it's a conscious choice not to engage with the political process. It's not clear why the Constitution would not protect that choice. After an hour of analyzing Officer Heffernan's motive, one thing was clear. Contemporary freedom of association doctrine has lost its way. We at the Beckett Fund filed an amicus brief in this case, in which we argued that the justices would do well to reroute freedom of association in the textual right of assembly. The Constitution protects the right of the people peaceably to assemble. During the constitutional debates, some people objected that the right of assembly was redundant and insignificant, but they dropped that objection when one of the delegates referred obliquely to William Penn. Penn was a Quaker leader in England who was arrested for trying to meet with other people to hold a worship service that was not authorized by the official state church. His trial lasted years and had a major impact on the founding generation. In Penn's case, English authorities used restrictions on Penn's right to assemble as a way of preventing him from exercising his right to free speech and freedom of religion. The framers were wise enough to know that the same thing could happen again. In fact, for almost 100 years, assembly was regarded as the most important First Amendment right because it safeguards the other rights. You can't put out a newspaper without a team. You can't make a minyan or take communion without a religious community. You can't organize a political party or a labor union without working together with others. This has a major impact on the perception of what Officer Heffernan was doing. Not every person who attends a political campaign or stops by a campaign office will have already made up his or her mind about supporting that candidate. The Constitution ought to protect the right of free inquiry, freedom of information, the right to gather with other people to find out more about a political candidate, to study an issue or hear a speaker, or just see what other people who believe in a given faith are like when they gather together. A freedom of association doctrine that focuses on the internal motives of every person at a given place will exclude all of this seeking, this inquiry, these asking questions. It will exclude skeptics who might show up because they want dirt on a candidate or they want to discredit someone's ideas by gathering more information about them. All of those are legitimate reasons for gathering with other people. But a focus on internal motives blinds us to the ways that inquiry, research, skepticism can all be furthered by gathering with other people. When the founders protected the freedom of assembly, they recognized what despots everywhere have always known. If you repress the right to assemble, you can stop all of the other First Amendment rights from ever having a meaningful impact. Clearing away questions about Officer Heffernan's subjective intent, neutrality versus apathy, returning to the text of the First Amendment, which protects assembly, the justices would be free to ask, is going to a campaign office to pick up a political sign to help your mother express her political views an act of assembly that the framers would recognize? When you put it that way, the answer is very clearly yes.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.